Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday morning. It is the 29th of April and a delight to have you with us. Hopefully you had a beautiful weekend and you're here and you want to find out what's going on in the world, what happened. Well, maybe you weren't paying attention, but probably you were and you're depressed and you want to talk about it. So here we are. We welcome you. Let me introduce the panel to you. We'll get started. We always welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let us welcome a political consultant to the Star's Libby Post. You're already feisty this morning. I can't wait to see you go on this morning. That's
great. Yeah, well, you know, I read some of those articles that really got me fired up.
I know. I may have picked them out with you in mind.
Did you?
What articles?
A conversation starters, yeah. Talking points, if you will. Associate professor and area head of behavioral neuroscience at UAlbany, Ewan McNay is with us. Good morning. A delight to have you back.
Thanks for me again.
Oh, well, it's a great pleasure to have you back.
Yeah, he's tough too. So what'll be great is to see if we can throw a little incendiary between
the
Libby
clash.
We're gonna have
Titans.
A cage match in a second.
But yes. Alan, you and I can mellow things out.
The voice you just heard is that of former Albany Common Council President Helen DeFossis, who a longtime SUNY educator and administrator, and is here with us this morning. She is in the D.C. area, but visits quite often, and we're lucky when she does to have her come in and be with us.
Thank
Good
you,
morning,
Joe.
Ms.
Delighted.
Helen.
I'm delighted.
We love having you. Also, Albany Law School professor Sarah Rogerson, who directs the Immigration Law Clinic, is with us. Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
Fantastic.
She's no shrinking violet either, by the way.
A big congratulations to Sarah. She has, it was announced yesterday from what came over on my feed, that she is receiving this year's recipient. This is a national award. The clinical, it's the clinical sections, which makes it sound boring. So I'm just going to say the Shannara Gilbert Award. This is to honor an emerging clinician that honors a clinical professor who has experience and commitment to teaching and achieving social justice, particularly in the areas of race and the criminal justice system, a passion for providing legal services and access to justice to individuals and groups most in need, service to the cause of clinical legal education, and an interest in international clinical legal education.
Goodness.
Wow. She is.
And we're done.
Wow.
Thank you.
And she's going to receive the award in San Francisco next week, which is the good news. Cool. The bad news is she'll miss the show next week.
But that's
yes.
And you end up in San Francisco.
Yeah.
What a shame.
But we congratulate you. That is awesome.
What
thank
a wonderful
you.
Thing.
That's really
thank
cool.
Thank you, Joe, for supporting the nomination.
Well, it's very nice to have you there, and it's congratulations.
Thank you.
Very nice. All right. So let us get started and begin with the news of the day or the news of the weekend or however you want to look at it. Does anybody have a preference on the story we start out with?
Biden.
Okay. We talked a lot about that. What else? Anybody else?
So why did you ask?
The war on women.
Well, I was going with either. I was thinking about the NRA turmoil.
Oh, you were. Mm-hmm.
That was the first story. So
yeah,
sure.
And let's that's what I was thinking.
But let's make sure we get to the rest.
We'll get to the rest.
Gee,
it's a packed Monday.
Thanks, Libs.
It always
hey,
is.
Hey, no problem, babe. I'm here for you.
And we're off.
Okay, so the National Rifle Association had their annual meeting in Indianapolis. It didn't go great. Lieutenant Colonel, retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, who until Saturday led the National Rifle Association, suddenly retired. He apparently was staging a coup over and that caused all kinds of issues. And then this is usually a very bland, boring meeting, but then North was saying that someone ought to look at the finances, that LaPierre is not doing well in that regard. He circled his wagons. He was able to get North fired. And now there's all of these different emerging camps. People are saying, well, the NRA should be more transparent about its finances, focus more on its traditional mission of firearms training and education rather than polarizing the nation's gun debate. And so all of this is going on, and I want to know what you think about it.
I think it's great for the public. We're finally learning what's been going on and what we suspected was going on all along in the NRA.
Yeah, but do we know what happened? I mean, do we really know what the issues were? You know, this guy was a board chairman, Ollie. Board chairmen generally aren't running the organizations, the directors, the executive director, whoever that is. And Wayne LaPierre has been in this thing from day one as the...
So 40-some years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, chief guy. So, you know, the old saying goes, if you kill the king, if you want to kill the king, you better succeed.
Better not miss.
Now let me quickly please add, because I don't want to bury the lead here, that the Attorney General of New York State has now opened up an investigation into the NRA.
And particularly the tax-exempt status.
Yes, right. Exactly.
That seems to me to be a key point.
Right.
Right. There's a nice, nice quote from the Brady campaign saying, they deserve a non-profit status like a Superfund site deserves organic certification.
Mm-hmm.
That seems pretty appropriate. This is clearly a political organization. Why is it a tax-exempt charity?
Meanwhile, President Trump wrote on his Twitter feed this morning that the National Rifle Association was under siege by Cuomo.
And the Democrats.
No, actually, it's Letitia James, our attorney general, who is bringing forth the suit. But, you know,
you think they
Trump
New York
sees
politician
one.
Close enough.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
He has
men,
too.
He's
actually
men.
Close enough.
It
I
mean, is close
she,
enough.
She was
yeah.
his person,
right.
No question
right.
about it. She is certainly, you know, out front on a lot of things. But one has to assume, because Cuomo has been so aggressive about gun control.
That's right.
That this is part of a program. Which yep. is good, as far as I'm concerned.
Must get its act together quickly, stop the internal fighting, and get back to greatness fast, says the president.
Can you imagine, Joe, when this gets, which it will, taken to its natural conclusion before the Supreme Court, right? This Supreme Court is going to rule that the NRA should be deprived of its tax-exempt status?
Well, I think probably what will happen is the internal splintering, right? And that's actually the best for public safety. I have attended NRA-sponsored pistol safety classes, and they serve a real purpose to the public.
Yeah.
So I think the best outcome is for that to continue and that to splinter off, and then for them to have to shut down the political arm of their
and many
organization.
People do. Many organizations have that. They have a
yep.
separate.
They'll just set up a C4, which is what they probably
should have
a C4. If they're giving money to candidates, they have to have a C4. They just need to separate them out from a branding point of view. But as far as I'm concerned, they shouldn't, because I'd like to see them go down the tubes.
Oh, yeah. The branding
the whole thing.
Is all negative
the
all
whole,
the time
yeah.
for a lot of us now.
Yes.
When what happens in this election year,
right.
now that Biden's getting out there and the 2020 campaign's on its way.
So the Wall Street Journal was the one that first reported that Wayne LaPierre had informed the board that he was being extorted
yes.
and pressured to resign by retired Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North of Iran-Contra fame.
Right,
of course.
So he's got some experience with that.
LaPierre wrote in a letter to the organization's board that North was threatening to make public destructive, embarrassing information about LaPierre and the NRA's financial dealings. Well, then that just seems, well, what is that? We want to know what that is. He didn't say it wasn't true. He just said it was damaging and embarrassing.
And he was being extorted. Now, what was the price there?
I'm thinking there are pictures involved.
Yeah.
Well, I also
a personal behavior by LaPierre.
Yeah. But you also have these guys who think they're above the law. I mean, LaPierre is one of these guys, like Trump, like a lot of the Republicans who think, William Barr, think that they're above the law, and they play on a different playing field with different sets of rules.
Well,
and
maybe
they have
by
to be
now,
brought down.
By now, he must be saying, so far, so good.
Yeah, right. You know, he's a Siena graduate, Wayne LaPierre.
Oh, gosh.
Well, that's right.
Oh, God, shall we say.
Yeah. So, and, you know, to have, I mean, honestly, the optics, having Ollie North, you know, say somebody else is doing something wrong is a little mind-bending, but.
So how do we think it's going to end up?
Well, we know how
with a whimper.
In the courts.
I'd be surprised to see it splinter.
Oh, yeah, it's going to just peter out. There's too many other stories competing for headlines this week.
Well, no, but Ollie's gone. Ollie's basically gone.
Yeah, Ollie's gone. Yeah. But James and the AG's office, and I think you'll probably see some other AGs around the country adding to this or joining the case. Mm-hmm. That'll keep going.
Yeah.
And we'll see what happens. You know, it'll be strategically timed for horrible things to come out right before the election.
I think the National Enquirer and others are probably frantically trying to figure out the backstory so that they can get the rights. And somebody else is trying to catch and kill as
and
we
it's,
speak.
And it's been, it was sold. I think the National Enquirer was sold
was.
To somebody. So we'll see how it goes.
All right.
It'll be the Post.
We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Okay, so William Barr, the powerful chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, threatened on Sunday to subpoena Attorney General William Barr if Barr refuses to testify this week, a move that could lead to a major escalation of the long-running feud between the White House and congressional Democrats over testimony and access to documents. The threat by the chairman, Representative Gerald Nadler, Democrat of New York, came on the eve of the Democrats' return to Washington after a two-week congressional recess that has been dominated by questions about the special counsel's report. Mr. Barr is scheduled to come before Mr. Nadler's committee on Thursday to testify about it. But Mr. Barr and Democrats are at loggerheads over the Democrats' proposed format for questioning him, and now the much-anticipated hearing is in doubt. Anybody think it's going
to
happen?
Well, the big fight is over who's going to get to question him. He said
and
he
for
would
how
come,
long, right?
Yeah, he would come for a rapid-fire round of questions, and then he was going to be done. And then Nadler says, well, wait a minute, let's have another round with the staff of mm-hmm. the committee who know what they're talking about, been working on these issues for a long time. And that's when he just balked and said, well, then I'm not coming. You're going to have to subpoena me.
So
but they're aching for subpoenas. You can see that Trump and his characters want subpoenas.
Which I think is the single biggest, most important issue in U.S. politics right now.
That's right.
There's a bunch of subpoenas. Tax returns, you know, the Mueller report, appearances before House committees. Are these in fact going to be enforced?
Well, let's
because
go to a lawyer.
If they're not, where is your rule of law? And so, you know, Alan commented about the Supreme Court a little while back. If all this ends up in front of the Supreme Court, there's going to be some ruling. Does the House in fact have power X? To which the answer seems to me to be clearly yes. Okay, who enforces it?
It still has
where
to
where are
be
we going
enforced.
To end up?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, the tax return. The language of the law seems really clear. You know, the head of the Treasury shall produce. There's no exception there. But it hasn't happened.
But that's the Samsonian attitude of the presidents, too, you know, that if you have to pull the temple down on everybody's head by challenging the authority of every institution, do it, as long as it's going to protect you from...
And it's worked so far, right.
But wait, you've got two things here. You're quite right. One is the Supreme Court. We know where that's headed, because it's going to be a graveyard now. And I'd love for Sarah to comment on this as the lawyer in the room. But also, you have a Justice Department which isn't going to do what they're supposed to do. Sorry.
Well, it really is all about enforcement. And and I don't know what the House Judiciary Committee rules say about the enforcement of subpoenas. But I wouldn't be surprised if they fight until they get a federal court judge. To finally, because I'm not sure who signs those subpoenas. Is it Jerry Nadler? I mean,
it's Jerry Nadler.
To be honest, I'm not sure. I think they have a reason to fight those, and I think they're on probably good legal standing. And that's what's so interesting about this is that we're sort of in uncharted territory with this administration, with the level of resistance, if I can call it that, to the rule of law, which means we're going to be making either a lot of really good law or a lot of really bad law in the next several months.
But just to be clear, when you say they have a reason to fight it, you're talking about the White House.
Yeah, the White House. Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, not the White House, the Department of Justice,
That's
the same thing, really.
See, it didn't used to be.
I know.
But right now, both sides seem to be aching for a fight. You know, this fight is going to break open in an unfortunate way in a country that's supposed to have balance of power government and everything like that. And we have a leader, a president, doesn't care about balance of power.
Yeah, and we're on a deeper, higher playing field when we're talking about the moral center and the moral compass of this country.
So beyond the legal, we have to remember the political. And the political here, it seems to me, is that I know Nadler fairly well. You know, he ain't giving up. He's a shark. And he's not going to stop because it's good for him. It's good for his base. Mm-hmm. It's good for the Democrats. And as Libby said before, I believe if he brings it up to the election, right up to the election,
it'll be good for the election.
It'll be all productive. Right. And for the other guys, it's good for them too because they say, "Look, he's trying to kill me."
Well, it's all theater, right? And I mean, I wonder if they have the power of contempt Like, wouldn't it be great theater for
Nadler
to command the attorney general be brought to, well, the federal marshals maybe.
Oh yeah.
So,
but Trump would have to.
The federal marshals would work for the Justice Department, right? That ain't going to happen.
So you're both correct, right? So yes, the committee can hold someone in contempt. The U.S. attorney for D.C. has the duty to bring the matter before a grand jury. But then the executive branch can decide not to prosecute. And so,
yeah, not to let those people
deliver. The theater of bringing it before a grand jury and the grand jury decides to indict and issue the subpoena.
Oh, if you have a D.C. grand jury, it will.
Yeah, and not then,
sure.
then the Justice Department flouting the laws of the land, use the
according
right word this
Libby
time.
Flouting, but
right.
According to the Trump using base, the,
right. Using the laws of the land, it'll be. I know the Trump base, but they don't understand how government works. So you know,
well,
they
so
don't
far,
really,
they
and they don't really care.
So far, Libby, they understand enough to.
Well,
to
they
make
understand.
It work in their direction.
They understand the president. Well, they think the president is all powerful and should be able to do whatever he wants to
right.
do.
And
because
he thinks
he's doing.
That. He
and he
yeah,
thinks that's true because right. he's doing what they want. He's
that's
saying
right.
what they want. That's yeah. all.
So, for instance, 2012, you know, Holder was held in contempt, and 3.5 years later, in 2016,
how do you know all this stuff?
He's got
I'm
it.
Really,
he's
really
got
looked
it
up.
Online.
Amazing.
3.5 years later, a federal judge rejected the claim of executive privilege.
Yeah, it'll
so
go
this
on
stuff
and
takes
on
years
on.
And years and years to get through.
All right, we have about, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have a great group here, Alan Chartok, Ewan McNay, Helen DeFossa, Sarah Rogerson, and Libby Post. We, of course, welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We'd love to hear what is on your mind about all of this, and we will continue our conversation after this short break. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here. Ewan McNay, Helen DeFossa, Sarah Rogerson, and Libby Post. You are in good hands. So let's go to a couple letters, and then we will go on to other topics.
What did you say the reasons that you shouldn't write letters, you couldn't write letters? In other words, what would be the reasons?
The rules?
The rules, yeah. What are those?
Yeah, well, keep them short. Keep them to the point. Don't include links or attachments and proofread before you send so we know what you're trying to say.
Okay, what about...
And don't send more than one a day. And what else?
What about lying?
Oh, well, there's
lying.
That.
Somebody,
yeah,
on,
yeah,
those, somebody on your panel said, you don't like Governor Cuomo. Now, the next three letters will be, why do you have Governor
yeah.
Cuomo on your show
Please
so much?
Please stop casting shade on Governor Cuomo.
It's unbelievable.
Did.
Okay, and so Julie says, NRA... Please keep repeating that the NRA does not allow open carry at their conferences. Why not?
Oh,
and that's
boy.
From Julie of Saratoga Springs.
Why don't they allow open carry at their conferences?
Yeah.
Because
Gun
they don't
safety.
Kill each other. That's
carry.
Why. You know, it's amazing where the Republican convention.
They won't kill each other.
Yeah. The Republican convention also missed all those pro-gun people. They wouldn't allow guns on the floor because they know what will happen.
That's what I love about you, Libby, and I really do love you.
What, I just say it?
They'll
all kill each other.
Well, it's a little overdone, don't you think?
Maybe they could all.
Well, look, you know, they get into a fight. It's like the OK Corral. That's what it turns into.
You're wearing the piece.
Yeah,
right?
You're wearing the piece. You got into a fight. I wanted that gun. No, those are my bullets. Oh, really? Here are some bullets for you.
They'll all kill each other. I love it.
All right.
Okay, Keith
all
says, the liar in chief, 10,000 lies. Alan is not surprised. Over the weekend, Trump told his 10,000th falsehood or lie. You know, the Washington Post ads.
Yeah,
that's
great.
This is not normal and should not be trivialized by the dismissive quip that all politicians lie. For some context, the President of the United States has told so many lies that if you told one lie a day from the moment you were born, you'd hit 10,000 lies when you were 27 years old. It has taken 827 days of Trump to tell 10,000 lies or falsehoods. This does not count all the lies that he's allowed his cabinet and other administration people to tell without consequences. Why should we believe anything that this administration says? He has lost confidence of 70% of the public. Keith.
But you know, Alan, not only does the public not seem concerned about that, but I understand on the issue of impeachment.
Yes.
The American people could care less.
They
don't
can.
Even, they
That's
don't want to talk about it. They don't want any time devoted to
well.
It.
Well, it's tough, Ellen, because I think that's made up of two groups. The big group, of course, is the 40% who don't want him impeached. We know about that, the Republicans. But in addition to that, there are people like me who think it's just dumb to bring an impeachment right now and to endanger.
And everything else would grind to a halt. That, everything.
Well, it's not only that, it. Helen, but the fact of the matter is he wants it. He wants an impeachment.
Yeah, he wants
effort.
To fight. He's ready.
Yeah, he likes that idea, impeachment effort. And also, you're not going to get a conviction. So why are you wasting your time?
Doesn't well, I'm glad the Democrats are not going for it.
Well, not only the, yes, so there are a lot of Democrats who don't like it, and of course there are the others who don't like it. So impeachment would appear to be not that popular.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get there.
It's not worth it. It's not going to do anything. It's not going because the Senate's not going to convict.
Is there an alternative view in the room?
There is, and the question is not yet impeachment. The question is the process is you open an investigation, which is the correct thing to do.
But that's what they're already doing.
They're doing that.
There's credible evidence that high crimes and misdemeanors may have been committed, so you gather the evidence. If that leads you to the conclusion you should indict, you do so. If the Senate then refuses to convict, that's on them. I mean, politically, I suspect it's probably a plus point anyway, but that's really not the point. The point is you have a rule of law here again. There's a process to follow. Follow the process.
But nobody wants to embark on the process.
Oh, I'm aware of that. But don't be afraid of that outcome just because you're trying to, politicize the game.
Okay, that's a position. However, there's another position here, I think. And that is, this guy Trump is one of the worst guys in the world that we have ever seen in this office. Mm-hmm. He is, in fact, leading this country into a kind of totalitarianism that is really scary.
Scary, very scary.
And as a result of that, you gotta be strategic about what you're going to do here. I say you won the House of Representatives the right way because people were furious with Trump. You're going to win the Senate. You're going to make even more inroads in the House, and you'll probably win the presidency if you continue to do exactly as you say, which is to investigate, but not.
Right.
And the difference isn't all that great. I mean, Nadler's going to bring out all of that stuff, for example. And now you may not say that this is an official impeachment hearing, but it's clear what it will be.
But, you know, Joe, I know you weren't keen on talking about Biden running for president and all of that. But
we talked about it a lot last week.
No, I know. I just wanted to make one statement in connection with this discussion. Could I do that?
Yeah. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is that, you know, Biden was saying over the weekend that if you have this president for one more term, he could have done lasting damage. Mm-hmm. To American political institutions. Lasting damage.
To say nothing of the Supreme Court.
Well, but I think that's a very important point, that one more term, those 4 years could be a really...
Hey, Helen, he may have already done that. In other words, you're saying one more term, but if you take a look at the Supreme Court nominations he's made and what McConnell's been able to do in holding back, you know, any kind of balanced court, it's quite something. You only read more?
Sure.
Okay. Maureen says, your opinions, please. If the White House keeps fighting these subpoenas, won't it fire up Congress to go ahead and start impeachment proceedings? Well, we did that, right? Okay, we just talked about that. Keith says, we've already done that. I'm done.
Okay,
we're
done.
To the bottom of my...
Okay,
down to
the pile is done. All right. So let us move on then and talk about other...
Biden!
No.
Go ahead.
No.
Talk about Biden.
No. So I can't anymore. So I think that the challenge for candidates, right, is not only... while all of this is happening in the background, is to offer an alternative vision for America moving forward. So, Mike, what does Biden have to offer that's new?
Oh, so you are going to Biden.
And exciting. Not really.
But if you don't want to talk about Biden, I went to a speech by Beto O'Rourke last week came to Alexandria, and I'm on the Alexandria Democratic Committee in Virginia and all of that. And he was voicing things right. He's from Texas. And all he wanted to talk about was Texas. And I was thinking to myself, listen, guy, if you're out on the main stage now for 2020 and you're getting this big kickoff event in Alexandria, Virginia, how about talking about the East Coast, Virginia, the nation as a whole? It was all Texas.
Now, Madam DeFoss, you are for Biden. You're a Biden fan, right?
Well, I am, but I went to this event for Beto O'Rourke, just wanting to hear and find out what he had to say. I was open to his claims, and I was just nonplussed by the fact that he wasn't prepared.
I have a little problem with Sarah's pronouncement on, you know, on Biden. We're tired of him. And look, everybody's talking about him. You talk any of the cable channels, that's all. It's 24/7. It's going to be Biden.
Now, the two stories today, of course, one was the View interview from Friday, and then today will be his first rally that will take place in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and the amount of money that he was able to bring in.
How many people show up and the fervor that they display.
However, he's in danger, and I'll tell you why. Because anybody who's the leader becomes the target of everybody else. And we know that. Now, there seems to be this split between, which I think is very, very serious, between the progressive, so-called progressive mm-hmm. community and the middle. I think that the reason you get Biden is because he has the gravitas, he has the decency, that an awful lot of purples will vote for him.
Well, they're treating him like he's too conservative.
Yes, they are.
For the progressives. He's always been too progressive for the moderates. So
that was decades ago.
Yeah, but
everybody needs to get their yayas out until
definition of a yaya?
Anyway? Yeah, they need to be able to.
I don't know.
Can you
say that on the radio?
This is a non-anatomical definition. They need to get their angst out about
their knee-jerk reactions.
Their angst out. In Yiddish, it's spilchus. It's like, you know, you need to just get it out.
No, spilchus is pins and needles.
This is their pins and needles. This is sort of
okay.
Their
and then what?
But they need to be able to feel like they've been heard.
Yeah. Okay.
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 And then come around.
Oh,
you know,
come around.
Everybody is talking about the need to support whoever the Democratic nominee is.
You have to be wined and dined a little. What you're saying?
Some people do.
Well, and they want apologies. So I think Biden has got to step up and apologize. He's hedging his bets all the time.
For what does he need
to
apologize
for Anita Hill?
He did.
Well, No.
I think I'm with Libby. I think he did.
He called her. He apologized. Yeah, he has said numerous times that he is sorry for how that all came out.
Getting caught in this, but here's what I'm worried about. Really worried about.
Yeah.
I tried to start this before, which is, I think Bernie may have the votes to win the primaries. And if he wins the primaries,
it'll be four more years.
He could lose. That's my own personal view. Whereas I think Biden could win the election, I'm not so sure he can win the primaries.
Well, he's already running stronger than Sanders, and that's why all of Sanders' people are rallying around. I mean, you know, Sanders will raise more money, and that
along
was the
with
other
Elizabeth
thing,
Warren.
Biden's big fund turnout that
and along
first
with
day.
Elizabeth Warren, right, Helen?
Yes, absolutely.
They're going to look. They're going to do it. They're going to attack him because they know that it's the only way they can win.
Well, stay tuned.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lively primary season. And, Hillary had the name recognition. Hillary had the money. Hillary had the support.
She had the negatives, too.
And right.
Well,
she had the baggage.
And
we got Obama.
Yeah. Right.
And that's the next question, which is, what about Obama?
He'll come out for
Jim. Now, Obama, who sees himself as a progressive, who took on a vice president, Biden, who he learned to love and respect, but who was a moderate.
Yeah.
Now the question is, will Biden be supported by Obama? And that's a tough one.
Not yet.
Why not?
Obama's sitting on his hands.
Yes,
because
but why?
He wants to be a kingmaker.
He'll do
and
it.
And it's not clear that Biden's going to be the king. So, I mean, I don't blame him for hedging his bets.
Well, it's not good for the party.
Yeah. Do it or not do it.
To do it right now.
Yeah, it's
too
early.
I'm sorry, Sarah. I interrupt you. I didn't hear what you just
said. It's not good for the party for Obama to come out early.
It's too early.
And Biden at least claimed he asked Obama not to endorse him.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
a bunch of baloney. You shouldn't have done that.
That was a clever thing for Biden to say.
I don't
Whether
think
it actually
so.
Happened,
I don't know.
But
I don't think that was clever. It was defensive and sounded
No,
weak.
He just said matter of fact. You know, well, I asked him not to come to my birthday party. I'm not upset that he didn't show up.
I think it's a valid point. If you want to have the best chance in the general, which everyone, at least on the same Democratic side, agrees thus far, then you want to make sure you have some of your big guns in reserve. You don't want to have someone endorsed by Obama who then loses.
Well, that's what Obama's thinking, too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue, and we'll welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us for this Monday morning. We have a great group. We have a lot to talk about, and we will continue on March on. We'll march on and talk about other stuff. Let's go to the fact of some of the things that were said over the weekend. I do want to get to the synagogue shooting that happened in did you? I thought you wanted me to talk. You know?
No,
you
I do want.
Of course,
you
okay.
should.
I
right.
just,
yes.
It's just
how are we going to put a stop to this?
There's, it was.
I can't figure it out.
It was a Passover shooting that happened on Saturday. A series of ceremonies on the final day of
Shabbat
of Passover, and the rabbi was walking into the banquet hall when he heard the shot. The rabbi was injured. One woman was killed. Several others were injured. And so it is another case of hate. And shooting.
We have an epidemic of anti-Semitism in this country and all over the world. And there were two really good opinion pieces in the Forward this morning talking about just that. You know, one is entitled, "Why Do Jews Have to Be Murdered for You to Admit That Anti-Semitism is Real?" Mm-hmm. Okay, and it's absolutely correct. Why do we? Why do we have to be? And the other is, "Spare Me Your Thoughts and Prayers. The U.S. has betrayed its Jews." And it's betrayed its Jews, it's betrayed its people of color, it's betrayed anybody who doesn't walk and talk the Trumpian line, because the NRA has so much power in this country that anybody can get a gun and they can walk in with
That's
impunity
where it is, yes.
to and shoot up mosques, mm-hmm. churches, synagogues. You know, Pittsburgh, this our problem in this country is not political extremists
it's
from
guns.
Outside of our borders. It's angry white men who are political extremists on the right who think that their right is to clean up what they consider to clean up this country. This woman it was Shabbat services, it was the last day of Passover. This woman was going to the Yisker service, which is the memorial service that's done 3 or 4 times a year to remember a loved one. Her mother had died this year, so she was also saying Kaddish. She was also still in mourning. We're in mourning for 11 months. I mean, it's beyond my comprehension that every time I look at my phone, I have to see this hate coming through in the headlines.
But what fascinated me, in addition to I'm sorry for the horror of what actually happened, was President Trump's reaction. I mean, he made a comment about it like he was giving the weather report. He said,
some people got hurt.
Yeah, thoughts, prayers.
Supposedly
yeah,
he
people.
Called the rabbi. I mean, this is a Chabad, so it's Orthodox community. Supposedly he called the rabbi and spoke to the guy for 15 minutes and made the rabbi feel better. Well, it doesn't make the rest of the country
feel
better.
When he went public, he did not dissuade a lot of people who've been, empowered by him to go radical.
No, he's not. And he's not going to, because it shores up his base and it makes him feel important.
And every time they do, they're going to talk about Jared Kushner and his daughter converting.
He's, that's his Jewish beard, is Jared and Ivana. To be quite honest, that's his Jewish beard. Look, I've got a Jewish son-in-law. My daughter converted, and she did an Orthodox conversion. So how much more? What more do you want from me?
I love you, Libby.
So the other,
I love you too.
The other big unfortunate news in anti-Semitism was the what was the New York Times doing? What happened there?
Oh wow!
The New York Times apologized for a cartoon that they published in their opinion page of its international edition that drew widespread condemnation for being anti-Semitic. The cartoon, which was published on Thursday in the print newspaper, portrayed a blind President Trump wearing a skull cap being led by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel, drawn as a dog on a leash with the Star of David collar. The image was offensive, and it was an error of judgment to publish it, the New York Times said in an editor's note that will be published in Monday's international
edition. So the question then becomes, how would you like to be that editor right now?
Yeah.
Well, and in today's edition, if you go to New York Times, our edition in the States, there's a full editorial about, not from the editorial board, an opinion piece chastising the Times.
But what is that saying about the atmosphere at the Times, that this actually happened? happened.
It's
too big.
That's what it's
saying. Well, maybe that, but is it also saying something about the anti-Semitism that's nascent or lurking or I don't know what? I mean, why did they think they could do that?
Helen, a lot of people have been... The trope has always been that the time that the Times that the Times is is a pro-Jewish institution,
right?
They're trying to show they're not. I mean, what is going on with publishing this cartoon?
Helen, I think this one dopey guy was sitting there overworked and decided he was going to put it in the paper. I'm sure that's what it was.
Well, you know, we do control all the media in the world, so.
Oh Jesus.
But it's true. That's part of the anti-Semitic. That's part of the anti-Semitic trope is that we control all the media. That it's the Jews who control all the media. I mean, you know, there was when the thing at Notre Dame happened, the conspiracy theorists blamed the Rothschilds. So,
All right. What's anybody else on that? If not, we'll go to letters. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you, Joseph. David says, the United States has to accept the proof that the SCOTUS Supreme Court of the United States is not immune or insulated from politics, and I know it would have taken heaven and earth to change that, but SCOTUS terms should be 12 years. Given each president one appointment per election, keep up the good work, David. David, I, from your mouth to God's ear, however, I have to say, should be schmudby. You know, I mean, that would take an amendment to the United States Constitution.
Never.
Don't hold your breath.
Fine to say it. Okay. All right. And then Anne says impeachment. It is the duty of the House to begin impeachment hearings. If they do not, they are failing at their duty to provide a check on the extreme expansion of executive power that we see with Trump. The current hearings do not carry the same gravitas to the public as would impeachment hearings. They seem more like a chaotic jumble. Their purpose is unclear.
Well, yeah. I mean, I have a question about this impeachment thing. Does anybody here feel that the country is ready or that what President Trump has done so far is so egregious that we should be talking impeachment? I'm not there yet. And I pay a lot of attention, and I'm a longtime left-wing, leftover liberal Democrat from the 60s.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm not there. I'm not there thinking it's time to talk impeachment. If they're going to talk, they have to be ready, and I don't think they're ready.
No.
There are at least three questions in there, right?
Yes.
So is there going to be a conviction? No. The Republicans in the Senate would vote for a dead hot dog if it was Republican. Is there grounds for an investigation that might lead to an indictment? Yes, I think so. Is the country ready for it? Well, the country's ready for the investigation. Do they think that there should be an impeachment? The polls say probably not.
Yeah. I think they're just trying to figure out if there's any there.
Yeah. Right.
And once there is, then
they're go for
there's
it.
There's a clear
I'd
path forward.
For it, but right now, it's not there.
Nope.
Well, Elias says, impeach. Biggest reason not to impeach. I love this line of reasoning because it's, in my opinion, despite the fact I have great admiration for Elias, who writes all the time, biggest reason not to impeach Pence, who supports the agenda, as Trump, would be a stronger candidate for the Republicans' next 4 years and all that would ensue, judges, EPA, corporate welfare, and on and on. Yes, if you were able to get rid of Trump, you would have Pence.
You have Pence.
But you're not getting rid of Trump. You're going through an exercise in futility. That's what you're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, the idea that we can't impeach him because if we impeach him, we'd have Pence. But you're not going to get Pence. You're not even going to impeach the guy. You'll impeach him, but you won't convict him. Roger says, good guy with a gun. Alan and the team. Are you guys going to mention that the horrific assault at the California synagogue was cut short by an armed attendee? How about this morning, the rabbi interviewed had just received his carry permit. Just trying to talk about both viewpoints. It's not about the gun and gun violence, it's about the violence, and that's Roger in Warwick.
Well, I think we talked about the violence and the anti-Semitism.
Well, yeah, but he's saying guns don't kill people.
People.
That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And if you have more guns, then you'll have more safety.
And is he saying that somebody at the synagogue shot back? They did.
They did.
Well, there was a guy.
A security guard.
Well, no, it wasn't a security guard.
No, it wasn't.
He was
off duty, right?
He was an off duty. No, but he was a border guard. I believe. I believe that's where he was. And he chased the guy.
Right.
But the other guy was the real hero, if you think about it. He was unarmed, and he just went for him. He didn't care that the guy had a gun. He just went right for his head. And the guy
stopped
his
a
gun.
Lot of would-be killings that just happened.
Yeah. Well, so Roger, that's interesting. So the rabbi had a gun, allegedly here, or if the rabbi didn't have a gun,
he was
just
in the process
received his carry permit.
Yeah, of getting
this
permitted.
Is why we don't want teachers carrying guns, this is why we don't want them, because it takes a lot, you know, to think that somebody will actually be trained enough and know enough to
And there's a difference between having a permit and carrying.
Oh, yeah. Right?
And
you're absolutely right.
And that's huge. And in New York, actually, fun fact, you're not allowed to touch a gun until you have your permit. So even when you're in the class, you're not allowed to touch it.
Right.
You can touch the component pieces, but you cannot handle a gun unless you have a permit. But once you have your permit, go for it. So that's insane. I mean, like, this is a more granular conversation that we need to have about what laws would be impactful. Nobody's saying get all the guns off the street.
No.
Get all the guns out of society. I think, especially in America. But what we do need to move past, get past the NRA, get past the both sides isms, get past, you know, have more structured and detailed conversations about what smart gun control reform looks like.
So I have a question for you, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
What about the I get the legal side of it, mm-hmm. but what about the first day that a teacher pulls out a gun and shoots an attacker?
Wait a minute. How did we get to this point?
Well,
we haven't armed our teachers
yet. No, because
yet.
We started about the rabbi and having the gun. And I'm just saying, in the court of public opinion, what happens then?
I have no idea, but arming teachers is a terrible idea.
It's a terrible
idea.
Well,
we all agree.
From a law enforcement perspective, I think in New York, what we've seen are, and they're not school resource officers, but additional security protocols,
sure.
Right? And making sure that to the extent that there are any guns in or near schools, that they're being carried by people who have many, many years of training.
You know, this whole concept of security is so difficult. We have a place where the Albany High School kids walk by every morning, every afternoon. And there was a fight next door here. And everybody knew that fight was going to happen. They all poured into the RSS parking area, and they stood around, and nobody did a thing to stop it. Now, sometimes the Albany police will, when they see a crowd moving, they'll come behind it in a police car. But in this case, there I was on the outside of the thing yelling, "Stop it!" Nobody even looked.
You were trying to divide the two groups?
Divide is a little bit much. I was trying to yell at them, "Stop it!"
And again, just to clarify, so this guy was, the power shooter, was fleeing the scene when he was shot at by an off-duty agent who hit the car but not him. So I think, you know, no one's entitled to their own facts, right? I don't think saying the attack was stopped by someone who had a gun is correct.
No, it wasn't. In fact, I said the other guy who chased them didn't have a gun. That guy was unarmed, and he just did. He said he was acting intuitively to head towards the guy, and as well as the woman who got killed, she stood in front of the rabbi.
That's right. She took a bullet for the rabbi.
What can you do in 3 minutes?
Well, you can't get gun control.
Oh, you mean more of this?
No, meaning that we're 3 minutes late.
Oh boy.
Okay. So
then cut us off.
So we're gonna stop and we're gonna turn it over to Ray, and then we'll come back, and then we'll get her 3 minutes.
I'll bet Ray's not happy.
Oh, he seems to be handling it fine.
He's
a little grumpy.
He's a pro. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion at 9 minutes past 10 o'clock. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Ewan McNay, Sarah Rogerson, Helen DeFossis, and Libby Post, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan has a few.
Sure. Zach writes from the Department of calling names. The political jitters and ambivalence on the part of the Democrats over whether or not to impeach is embarrassing and cowardly. Cowardly. That's a nice
word. Wow.
Congress. See you out on the plane there, Zach. Congress has a duty to fulfill, and Mueller laid out a blueprint explicit stating that no one is above the law. What makes them think Trump will allow free and fair elections to happen in 2020? Fat chance. What do you think, Helen? You think that he's capable of that? Oh, I'm getting a lot of letters that he's gonna stop the electoral process. I say he cannot get away with that.
No, yeah. I think he's going to threaten to do a lot of things, and he's going to posture, and he's going to do everything, but it's not going to come.
He's going to try to make sure that nobody gets the vote, for example, in the wrong.
And
in
I
the
don't
wrong
think.
Room.
I mean, I would be really, really. He's got some sensible people around him now. He doesn't often listen, but once in a while they can really get to him. And I think on something where he could really do himself in, as well as the country, I think there's going to be a group that pulls him back. That's what I think.
Well, what do you mean, do himself in?
Well, I mean, not only could he appear to be a terrible president, I don't think he wants to go down in history as a terrible president.
Too late.
Oh, I don't think he cares.
No, he does care. He does care.
Too late.
Let's assume there's going to be an election. The question is, how many people are going to get to vote? Can they vote on time? Can they vote without being suppressed? You know, are there going to be polling places open? That's, I think.
No, I understand. But, you know, in the last election, there was a lot of attempt to study that. And was there manipulation of the voting process to keep a lot of people away? Finally, that all kind of petered out. Mm-hmm. I think they couldn't find enough evidence one way or the other. But I agree with you. We don't want to suppress the vote. At least I don't want to suppress the vote. And I think there are a lot of people in America that don't want
to. Well, we already are, with the Supreme Court apparently set to rule that the citizenship question can stay on the census.
Yes.
Chef Rick writes in, I am listening to your discussion about who is going to be voting for Joe Biden, and I'm afraid you're missing an entire segment of the voting public. I work mostly with people in their 20s, and believe me, there is no enthusiasm whatsoever for Joe Biden in that segment. That segment came out strong for Obama, and the Democrats need to win. Remember this, the most people in their 20s and 30s do not have a landline, so they are not in the polling area. Please don't miss the important segment of the progressive movement. I think you're right, Rick. There is a lot of people in the progressive movement who are not Biden supporters.
But I think older people are still the largest cohort in this country,
and we turn out and vote.
They vote.
And I also don't think Rick is right, because as my PhD advisor used to, Dr. Padilla used to say to me, Shartok, old leadership expression, for example, stinks. In other words, you know, you talk to three people and you think that that's and you think that's what it is, but it isn't. And the polling data, as you said before, is pretty strict with that. And the other thing is about the polling, they have figured out ways, the pollsters have figured out ways to get to the kids with cell phones.
The aluminum door companies have your number, so do the pollsters.
Yeah. Right. The aluminum, 1-800, yeah, with Lewis Aluminum. Yeah, okay. So that's from Chef Rick. Okay. And Crystal says, synagogue shooting. Good morning, panel. My condolence to everyone who shares in this sadness. Just want to point out yet again, an AR-15 was used in this heinous crime. Let's get rid of these. What else has to happen in this military to get this military weapon banned?
Right.
Yep.
And Nancy says, Joe Biden. I can hardly believe they all seem to accept Joe Biden. You didn't do that. I believe that they all seem to accept that Joe Biden would be a strong candidate against Trump. His legislative voting record, his role in the smearing of Anita Hill, his work against busing, his participation in writing the crime bill, bankruptcy question, ties to credit card companies, all serve to crush enthusiasm in critical segments of the electorate. Thank you for that. And that's from Nancy.
I'm with you, Nancy.
And what is it they say other than that, Mrs. Lincoln?
And Rob says,
that was the play.
Don't you enjoy the play? Yeah. I mean, goodness.
Oh, here's a good one. I'm an anti-Semite now. Anti-Semitism. So which Trumpian at the New York Times drew the anti-Semitic cartoon? Alan, your defense of a tired writer sounds anti-Semitic. Did any of the recent shooters have the recent legal ability to buy a gun before Trump was elected? Okay, so I'm an anti-Semite. Thank you very much for that. Appreciate it. Jeannie says, white nationalists, the Trump administration has cut funds to fight white supremacist groups. That is de facto support. Dear Alan and whole panel, I'm so glad Governor Cuomo has chosen to get on the radio with Alan. I always enjoyed listening to me and Mario, but assumed Andrew just didn't want to face any tough questions on live radio. I have yet to hear him stumble, and he does not, and he does display charm I didn't know he had. Now that he's opened up, I like him more than I used to. Why did he wait so long?
Wow.
You're going to get letters about that letter.
Well, the truth is, he was angry at me. He was angry at me, and he didn't talk to me for 8 years.
But what's he afraid of, though? He's not bad publicly, and I think he could get more practice.
Well, he's very good, and I got to tell you, I ask him every tough question anybody can send me, but they've got to be tough. And you know, that's what it is. Marcia says, "Dear panel, receipt of an apology is in the eyes of the injured party. The total blowing off of Anita Hill's testimony, as well as the inability of other women to testify, had a serious negative effect on her reputation, career, and life." That's true, Marcia. Reed says, "Impeachment. Unfortunately, I think the political calculus should drive the Democrats' actions as it relates to impeachment. They must put principles on the side and give the electorate a chance to overwhelmingly reject cultish conservatism once and for all, and hopefully deliver a working majority in the process." Okay. Anybody on that? No. Lucas says, "Misunderstanding on New York gun laws. What Sarah just stated about New York gun laws is completely misleading. She was possibly thinking of pistols, a particular type of, quote, gun that is highly controlled in the state. Anyone over 16 is allowed to own a rifle in New York. Anyone over 18 to buy a rifle or ammo. Over 21 at some stores, as long as they pass a background check. It is a fairly long and expensive process to get a pistol in New York and has to be approved by a judge or sheriff in most counties."
That is true.
What'd you say?
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm in the process right now. Yeah. But go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted the letter.
Okay. "Please study up a bit on these things so you assiduously oppose and talk about so frequently. Thanks for what you do." And that's from Lucas.
Hey, Lucas, I am. I'm so glad that you are setting that challenge forth, because I have been... I've been waiting to pay the fee that's required for a pistol permit. He's right. I think that's what I said, is that in order that before you can carry a pistol in New York and to apply for the permit, you can't touch one until you have that permit. That's a fact.
I heard you.
Yeah,
there is a long process. It is pretty involved, and it should be. And so I'm going to, I actually did this as a challenge to myself, because I think that it's important for any of us. I agree with Lucas. Any of us who feel strongly and passionately about an issue, to know as much as humanly possible, including the other side's point of view. So.
And that's why you want to get a pistol permit?
Yep. I want to go through the process. I want to go to a shooting range. I want to fire a pistol. I want to know what that feels like, and I want to be in conversation with other people who are doing that. I had great conversation with the people who were at my pistol safety training class.
Yes, but what leads you to carry?
Oh, I wouldn't carry it. Oh, and I wouldn't buy one.
I went clay pigeon shooting on holiday about a couple of years ago, and put a picture of myself with a shotgun on my Facebook page. The reaction of most of my friends was entertaining to watch. Like, you're exactly right. Finding out as much information and data and facts as you can is always crucial.
And overcoming fear. I mean, the more that we can argue from positions of faith as opposed to positions of fear, faith and knowledge over fear and ignorance should win every time. And that's the real battle that we're waging in all of this.
I know we don't have very long to go. Sure. And one thing I did want to get to, the comment from Trump about doctors killing babies.
Yes.
This is nuts, right? It's, again, an attempt to demonize expertise and knowledge and facts
in
favor of rhetoric, lies, and hate. It's just simply incorrect. And it's happening across multiple areas in this country and across multiple countries. The war on expertise.
That's
and
right.
You don't have to have a baby in order to know the finer details of what it's like to
so
have
just
a baby.
So, it's just not... so everybody knows, this was at a rally on Saturday night where the president was speaking. Wisconsin? Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yes. Yeah.
And he said the baby is born, the mother meets with the doctor, they take care of the baby, they wrap the baby beautifully, and then the doctor and the mother determine whether or not they will execute the baby.
How does he get away with that?
President Trump revived on Saturday night what is fast becoming a standard and inaccurate refrain from about doctors executing babies. During a more than hour-long speech at a rally in Green Bay, Trump admonished the Democratic governor, Tony Evers, for vetoing a Republican bill that could send doctors to prison for life if they fail to give medical care to children born alive after a failed abortion attempt.
Oh, wow.
You know what always gets me about this, and I really don't understand. I'll probably get help for saying it. But, there are a lot of poor women. There are a lot of Republican women. There are a lot of 16-year-olds who get pregnant and who have abortions or need abortions. Don't those people ever speak up?
Yeah, oh yes, they do. And this isn't just a war on science. This is a war, the continuation of the GOP's war on women. You know, they want us to be barefoot and pregnant. That's really the bottom line here. And to submit. I mean, that's really what they want. And that we're just receptacles so we can keep having more babies for the men to build their whatever they
want. But
Libby,
they lost the congressional election based on what we know about suburban women and other women.
I get that. And those women are speaking up. You know, there is, look what happened in New York State with the Reproductive Health Act. Women spoke up. We flipped the Senate, and we got the Reproductive Health Act. The women's marches are continuing. The grassroots blue wave is continuing. People are speaking up. You know, whether poor women without resources have the wherewithal to speak up, some do, some don't. So for those who can't, those of us who can, we do. But this is really just the continuation of the GOP's war on women and their heartfelt desire to deny us our right to control our own bodies. But what I found interesting was that last week the Kansas Supreme Court ruled that the laws they passed in Kansas to restrict abortion were unconstitutional. Kansas. You know,
that's a very good sign.
Sam Brownback land, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so that's a very, very good sign.
And speaking of standing up, I mean, I was thinking of political theater at the beginning of the show. And do you remember Wendy Davis, the Texas state legislator who stood in her pink sneakers for how many, 20, 36 hours straight?
To defend
reproductive rights. Right. And so we are speaking up now, whether or not that gets a lot of play when we have more airtime devoted to Joe Biden is another thing altogether.
Uh-oh.
So
came back around.
The other part of this is that these men are so duplicitous because
all men.
No, these men who are like Trump, like all these guys who are railing against abortion. I mean, Trump in particular sleeps with whoever can sleep with him, and I am sure that there have been abortions in his past.
Careful.
I am absolutely
Careful.
Sure of it. Why?
Well,
It's my opinion. You know, there are stories after stories of these right-wing, you know, K Street guys who all live in these houses together in Washington, and they bring the young girls in, and then they force them to have abortions. These stories have been in the news.
I mean,
let's be real. Let's be real about this.
Yeah, but let's close on some realistic notes. Let's talk about real
politics. But that is real.
I know it's real, but it's way out there real. Is there anything that we can focus on that's coming up in New York State or something? I mean, I'm just...
Well, the primaries are coming.
We're just looking for a happy note. Is
are
that
eight
really
weeks
important?
Away.
Well, at least, you know, more fact-based versus opinion-based, sure.
The facts are that women die from back alley abortions. Those are the facts.
Absolutely.
And the facts are that some abortions are related to the health of the mother.
Right.
And that some, that it's a very small, tiny percentage.
Small that happened after 20 weeks.
And also of fetuses that are quasi viable. I mean, it would require massive medical intervention.
Right. And then the insurance companies say no. So.
Exactly.
You know.
All right. We're just about out of time. I want to thank everybody for being with us. A quick reminder, we have the, it's Friday. This coming Friday.
I can't wait.
Is the Pete Seeger birthday concert happening at the Linda. And
I really want everybody to come.
Good friend, Happy Trum, right?
Yes, that's right. One of the best interpreters of Pete.
How are the ticket sales so far?
Oh, they're all right, but we can fit some more people in.
Okay, great.
So $100 a ticket. All that money goes into the Walk Box, which, by the way, the fund drive's coming up June 3rd, so we can use that, too. And we would love to have everybody together to celebrate Pete, and all you have to do is go to WAMC.org. You can also go online or give us a call, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262, and we can get you all set up for Friday night. It'll be a big deal.
We'd love to do that.
Excellent. My thanks to Alan and Ewan and Helen DeFossis. Thank you. Sarah Rogerson, again, congratulations. Libby Post, thank you. You already got one foot out the door. That's all right. We'll be back after this short break.